This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The Department of Energy is considering a request from Ohio-based utility First Energy Solutions for an emergency order to help keep some of its power plants operating across the Ohio Valley. As Brittany Patterson reports, the request has reignited the debate over what can and should be done to help the struggling coal industry.
At the heart of First Energy's request is three numbers.
And we'll be looking at that 202. You know what a 202 is, right? We'll be looking at that. We're trying.
That was President Donald Trump in West Virginia earlier this month. He's referring to a little-used section of the Federal Power Act. Section 202 of the law allows the Department of Energy to intervene if the electricity grid is in jeopardy. Typically, it's used during times of war or during natural disasters. But First Energy wants an emergency order to help keep struggling nuclear and coal plants in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia from closing. Ari Pesco, director of Harvard's Electricity Law Initiative, says that would be a very different use of the law.
This request by First Energy is just way broader than that. And is not about a particular reliability emergency. It really makes the argument that there's something wrong with how plants are getting paid.
First Energy says its plants deserve extra compensation because without their baseload power, the power grid is in danger if a major storm hits. Regional grid operator PJM says those claims are overblown, and other opponents say First Energy's request is really an economic Hail Mary. Days after asking for the order, the company filed for bankruptcy. If DOE approves the request, that could open the door to other utilities to ask for a similar bailout, says Sonia Agarwal, vice president of the energy policy think tank Energy Innovation.
You know, if at any moment the government can kind of come in and say, look, you know, we want to bail out these particular units, I don't know any investors that would want to get involved in a market like that.
Pressure is mounting on the federal government to follow through on Trump's pledge to help coal plants. Federal data show 533 coal plants have closed in the past decade as the industry shifts to cheaper natural gas. Proponents of federal intervention are adamant DOE can and should use 202C. Coal magnate Bob Murray said last week that the federal government's only option is to grant the emergency request. Murray Energy is the largest supplier of coal to the plants First Energy would shutter. Energy Secretary Rick Perry has so far been tight-lipped. At a recent federal budget hearing, West Virginia Republican Representative David McKinley asked the secretary what options are under consideration.
There are a number, as you said, 202C is one of those. There may be other options which we need to look at as well.
Are we getting close to a decision?
Expedition is of importance.
Last year, the agency proposed a rule to help coal plants, but was shot down. Pesco at Harvard says there aren't many options left for the federal government, and state legislatures have been reluctant to take action.
Now, I'm not sure under existing law what else the Department of Energy can do here. You know, if they don't move ahead on this, I'll be interested to see what their next move is going to be.
A spokeswoman said the agency is still deliberating. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in Morgantown, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Authorities hope to recover more than 600 pounds of dynamite stolen from a pipeline work site in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. A subcontractor working on the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline in Marietta, PA, reported the theft on Monday after security personnel discovered the door open and locks missing from a truck trailer. The Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives says someone also took 400 blasting caps used in the detonation process. Special Agent Charlene Hennessy says this is the first instance she can recall of explosives going missing in Pennsylvania.
It's pretty rare. According to the U.S. Bomb Data Center, there was a report put out back from 2016 and 15 reports of explosives being stolen nationwide had been reported.
An Atlantic Sunrise developer says the incident took place at a storage yard operated by a contractor. The pipeline is slated to bring natural gas from northeastern Pennsylvania to markets across the mid-Atlantic and southeastern United States. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Breezy today with scattered rain and snow possible, highs in the 30s and 40s. Partly cloudy tonight with a chance of rain and snow in the south, lows in the 30s. Sunshine tomorrow with highs in the 40s and 50s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. And by the law firm of Jenkins Fenstermaker, PLLC, offering an individualized approach to each client's legal needs. A year ago this week, white supremacist groups descended on Pikeville, Kentucky, aiming to rally white working families, where they were met by anti-fascist groups from across Appalachia and elsewhere in the country. After a deadly incident in Charlottesville, Virginia in August, many of these white supremacist groups fractured as a result of increased scrutiny and internal power struggles. There is evidence that remnants of those groups have recently sprung up in north-central West Virginia. Dave Mistich takes a look at some incidents where the groups have been active, the community reaction, and how to identify such messages if you find them in your own neighborhood.
In late February, Fairmont resident Stephanie Carter was poking around on a community Facebook group when she saw a post that some suspicious flyers had gone up around town.
So the day after that post, I just went looking, walked around for a couple of hours, and they had kind of narrowed it down based on some of the buildings that were surrounding where they thought it was. And so actually it was right here on this pole.
Carter points to a telephone pole in her working class neighborhood, about a mile from downtown Fairmont. The flyers were from a group called the Patriot Front, a neo-Nazi white supremacist organization, one that would fall under the umbrella known as the alt-right.
They have language like life, liberty, and the pursuit of victory, Patriot Front, blood and soil. The next one is strong families make strong nations, patriots reclaim your birthright, defend your nation. This one actually has a Star of David on it. So pretty overt, I thought.
However, Carter acknowledges that others in her community might not have been able to recognize the more vague, seemingly innocuous phrases on the flyers as messages from a hate group. She immediately pulled them down. A few weeks later, in March, more flyers began to spring up on the campus of West Virginia University in Morgantown. The flyers looked a lot like those the Patriot Front had placed around Fairmont, using the same font and similar designs. Like Carter and Fairmont, those who recognized the messages on the flyers for what they truly were immediately took them down. But these had come from the Patriots of Appalachia, a group that takes even more pains to hide its true intent. The flyers attempted to brand the organization as, quote, a fraternity dedicated to survival and fitness. In taking a look at the group's YouTube and Twitter accounts, their true motivation is clear. When the flyers appeared around campus, WVU Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs Joyce McConnell says the university was quick to respond.
As soon as we knew about them, we notified our university police department because we always want to do everything we can to make sure people are safe. And so our chief of police, Bobby Roberts, immediately began an investigation on who may have posted the posters, whether they were members of the campus community or whether it was an organization outside the campus.
McConnell says the WVU Police Department ultimately determined the flyers came from people outside of the campus community. University officials released statements to faculty and staff, citing the First Amendment right to free speech, but also making it clear that, quote, sentiments expressed on these flyers and endorsed by this group are contradictory to the core values of our institution, end quote. Ryan Lentz is a senior investigative reporter for the Southern Poverty Law Center, a nonprofit that tracks the activity of hate groups in America. He says white supremacist groups aim to appeal to those who are unaware of their existence and motivations, from what's printed on their flyers down to their names and even branding.
If you look at the Patriot Front and the Patriots of Appalachia, they're very much cloaking their racist ideologies in imagery of patriotism and liberty and freedom-loving Americans. And so when you look at that, if you're just a bypasser on the street, you don't think, oh my God, that's a hate group. You think, what is this? And all they really want is for someone to be curious enough to go down that perverse rabbit hole and come out the other end, you know, having been indoctrinated and radicalized.
The SPLC has been closely watching groups like these since the early 70s. In the wake of Charlottesville, they've paid closer attention to new groups on the alt-right, like the Patriot Front. While the Patriots of Appalachia appear to be in a recruiting mode and might seem to be linked to the Patriot Front, their ideologies slightly differ, and the two aren't necessarily linked organizationally. But Lynn says they could share players in the alt-right movement.
Yeah, I guess the best way to look at it would be that Patriot Front is a little bit more about that blood and soil fascism I mentioned, whereas the Patriots of Appalachia are taking taking their cues from what Richard Spencer has advocated for, that being an ethno-state, this sort of alt-right ethno-state where where whites would separate from all other ethnic groups for the purposes of, you know, racial hegemony.
Attempts via email and Twitter to reach the Patriots of Appalachia, as well as individuals identified as being connected to the group, went unanswered. Lynch says there have been considerable debate amongst modern-day hate groups on the alt-right about whether they should portray themselves explicitly as white supremacists or shroud their ideologies in a less noticeable fashion.
This is a matter of optics. You know, for years, racists in America paraded in whatever costumes or attire were appropriate for their ideology. You had neo-Nazis in Illinois, you know, with swastika armbands marching through the street, and and that's not even to mention, you know, the history of hooded Ku Klux Klansmen and the Klansmen in the South.
Lynn warns not to be fooled by the use of the word patriot in the name of a hate group. He also says that although some of these groups are not fully organized, there's always the potential for violence.
Make no mistake about it, white supremacist ideas, no matter how they're packaged, have the propensity for violence. I've often said it, and I'll say it again, it's not a matter of if these ideologies turn violent, it's when they turn violent. And increasingly, as the alt-right continues to fracture and all these different groups appear, the likelihood, or the possibility, rather, of violence is certainly present.
Lynn urges people to be on the lookout for this kind of activity and alert law enforcement if they see something suspicious. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.
Hello, I'm Bob Nistendirk.
And I'm Cami Chapman.
We've been protecting West Virginia Public Broadcasting since 1995.
In 2005, I became a sustainer for local news and music and information.
I like Inside Appalachia, West Virginia Morning, and especially West Virginia Public Broadcasting News. Protect West Virginia Public Broadcasting as a sustainer now.
Call 1-800-723-4687 or go online
at wvpublic.org.
Thanks.